time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, December 18th, the Monday before Christmas. We will be doing a live, or no, we'll be doing a pre-recorded podcast on Christmas Day. And Mr. Kittle reminded me, I will not be here dialing in Christmas Day. No, would I, nor I expect any of us to do that. We hope you will be celebrating. But folks, we will be doing a live broadcast. I'm really excited about it. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information. We've got some really interesting timely information, especially what the MBA is reporting on this morning. Share that with you in just a minute. And we bring that timely information in an audio format you can listen to anytime, anywhere. In January, we will start broadcasting live again, start going live. I actually had some people call me this last week. Lickin', the link that you used to use for going live isn't working anymore. We listen to you live. So we're getting the call, we're going back, but this time it'll be broadcast on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, and I'm not sure what other channels, but as the other channels we see demand for, we'll broadcast live on that. Some will be audio, some will be where those of us that are regulars dial in on a video basis, but it's very excited. Joining back, coming back from COVID land is Mark Helm. Mark, good to have you back on as the co-host today. Man, you were down and out, dude. What happened?
You don't know how glad I am to be back. I can certainly understand how people never make it back because it is the worst thing I've dealt with for the past 2.5 weeks that I've ever had. And I never got it first time around during the epidemic. I was okay. But this thing just completely wiped me out. So I'm glad to be back to talk to all of you. More ways than one.
Well, we're glad to have you back, Mark, and that's for sure. Let's go through our sponsors real quickly. So grateful for each one of our sponsors, Byte Software. Again, designed to be both a powerful and flexible software program. And big corporations could use this as well as some startups. So it's really scalable from the smallest up to the biggest. Enterprise, that's the word I was looking for. So anyway, Byte Software gives you the total control over your loan process and the freedom to do business the way you want. It maximizes efficiency, unlimited custom screens and fields powered by governance, flexible API, workflow automation, just a whole lot more. Be sure to check them out. The best part of these guys, they don't lock you up in a long-term contract because they're insecure and they got to do that. The only long-term contract you should go into is a marriage. That's the one. I don't know. All your stuff when it comes to technology, short-term contracts. If they're good, we should earn a right to be there every single day. That's what I love about Byte Software. Finastra, the largest fintech company in the world, is a sponsor. Grateful to have them. Now, their users rely on their automated email notifications for each stage of the loan process communicated out in a real-time basis. Check out Finastra. Also, Total Expert. I love these guys. These are market leaders with what they're doing with their CRM technology. Their customer engagement technology increases loyalty, drives growth for anybody that's in the mortgage lending process. Check out Total Expert. And so glad for that partnership. Thank you to Joe Weilu and to all of our sponsors. Also to Lender Homepage. This is an all-in-one powered platform that provides a seamless platform to mortgage businesses of all sizes. They've been around. They've been building websites. They're doing so much more. We've got an interview that we're just released. I'm really excited about that. Also, Truve. You've got to check out Truve. You are able to reduce your cost to do employment, income, industry, and what is asset verifications, what you will do with the leader out there. All know who that is. Want to be respectful of them because we're friends with the leader. That is The Work Number. They're a great company. But if you can cut the cost by 80% by going over to Truve, check them out. T-R-U-V. They will help save you so much money. Also, Angel AI. Man, this new technology of Angel AI, as Alan talks about it, is pretty powerful, really powerful. Check out what Angel AI does. It is literally a tectonic shift in technology in our mortgage space. Mortgage Bankers Association, thank you. We're going to hear from them in just a minute. Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative. I can't wait to hear Kittle's 12 Days of Christmas. It was overwhelmingly successful. Hear about that in a minute. Knowledge Coop, iEmergent. Man, what an intelligent platform must have in 2024 as you build your business. Also, Mobility MMI and Modex, both of these so powerful when it comes to recruiting. Loan officers can't get away with embellishing on their production. Not that anyone would ever embellish on what they did. Anyway, keeps everyone honest. So anyway, very good stuff. Last week on December 13th, we released the episode with Rocky and Quay of Lender Homepage. So it was last week. Thank you for refreshing my memory with these notes, man. The topic we talked about was Mortgage Tech maximizing production in 2024. Listen to that podcast. Then last Friday on December 15th, I got on a podcast with my good buddy, Dave Savage. We talked about interviews and success stories that he does on Mortgage Coach from some of the top originators. We talked about what are the common denominators? What are things that loan originators are doing that Dave is hearing on his podcast? We're going to have Dave on a more regular basis because these stories inspire me to see what's going on. Go back and listen to December 15th, the podcast with Dave Savage. Love that, brother. Also, upcoming this week, December 20th, we have Debbie Wymus coming on, DW Consulting. This is how to help your LinkedIn profile look better, more professional. Now, you say, I'm not looking for a job, but you need to have your LinkedIn profile update because if people are doing business with your company, they want to know the people with whom they're doing business with and what their background is. It's so important you have an up-to-date and be aware of the latest tools that LinkedIn, which keeps evolving and growing, so you can make better use of LinkedIn. Make sure you check up on that. Again, December 25th, I just recorded a podcast on Friday afternoon with Stephen Phelan of Movement Mortgage. He's talking about loving and valuing people and what the Movement story is. It's so much bigger than just that mortgage company. And I just love the story. It's a really appropriate Christmas Day podcast. So listen to that. Again, a shout out to our regulars. We love them all. Adam DeSantis, we're going to hear from him in just a minute. Les Parker is going to be dialing in shortly. Can't wait to get his take on the latest of the market. Matt Graham, have his recorded comments live with us today. David Kittle, Alice Alvey, and hopefully we'll be hearing from Alan Pollock. So great lineup for today's podcast. Let's get over to Adam DeSantis with today's MBA Mortgage Minute. Adam, what do you have with us?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association, and I have great news to share. Last week, Senators Jack Reed and Bill Hagerty introduced the Home Buyers Privacy Protection Act, which would restrict the use of pre-screened reports, also called trigger leads, under the Fair Credit Reporting Act to limited circumstances during a real estate transaction. Eliminating trigger lead abuses while preserving their use in appropriately narrow circumstances, such as a current relationship or consent, remains an MBA priority. The introduction of the Senate companion bill, along with the House bill released earlier this year, is directly in response to MBA's leading advocacy efforts on this issue. Participate in MBA's two Mortgage Action Alliance call to actions today by visiting mba.org/MAA and urge your U.S. representative and U.S. senators to co-sponsor the two MBA-supported trigger leads bills. MBA will continue its focused advocacy to advance both of these bills as soon as possible. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Good job, Adam DeSantis. Appreciate you. Appreciate what's going on. Let's have a little discussion around this. I thought I'd get some feedback. Alice, if you could unmute and join us on this. I want to get, as well as Kittle, your thoughts on what the MBA was talking about there. This seems pretty significant, and I think it's something we all need to get behind and support. It seems good. Alice, love to get your commentary on this.
Yes, absolutely. As an industry, we really want to try and get a handle on the trigger leads so that they're not just, we're losing our customers because the credit bureaus are selling the information and selling this access so quickly. So one of the things about the Senate bill that's a little bit different than the House bill is that they're opening it up so that if it's my customer as a depository, whereas previously the House version is, then I'll get notified.
Wow. Very good. Mr. Kittle, your thoughts on this? Trigger leads. It seems like a great bill.
Yeah, it's a great MBA did what MBA is chartered to do, and that's advocacy and represented its members, and I applaud. It's great. I realize I hear from our members at TMC exactly what Alice is talking about, and it's got to get fixed, and it looks like it's going to.
Going to, at least we got a bill interjected in that. Mark, any thoughts you have if you want to add on?
Same as Alice and Mr. Kittle. It's a little while in coming. I'm glad we have it, and I think it's a great move forward.
Yeah, hopefully it'll pass. But the point of it is what the NBA brought out in there, and I don't want you guys to miss this. It's important that you download the Mortgage Action Alliance, MAA, referred to it as MAA, the MAA app. You can go to the NBA website. You can go to your smartphone, download that app. We need to get behind this and support this, everybody. So do it. Do what you're supposed to do and support the NBA. No, you do not have to be a member of the NBA to do that, but you should be. Very good. All right. Let's get over to Les Parker, who's going to be dialing in to the program here shortly. Looking forward to his comments about what's going on in the market. But let's get Les Parker's TM Spotlight update of the markets and a macro view. And again, Les has got some song. Listen to the lyrics. Don't listen necessarily to his voice. Don't be critical about the voice. Listen to the lyrics.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy.
Follow the rate drop down to Randall Mark, listening to the wind of change.
Mortgages reached our target of 7% because the Fed acknowledged the need to reduce its policy constraint, and the radical climate agenda failed at COP28. Near term, without any fresh data to feed the feeding frenzy, look for a correction to 7% mortgage rates that hit 6 5/8. In 2024, expect a drop to 5.5, depending on the deflation exported by China. The big change in rates gives hope to renters to buy,
where the home buyers of tomorrow, dream away.
These views are mine. Listen to the wind of change at tmspotlight.com.
Yay! Okay, Les Parker just joined in. Les, good to have you joining in. We're going to get your commentary on that in just a minute.
David, I could have sworn that was Frank Sinatra, not Les.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to emulate the Scorpions, and it wasn't the best. It was tough to match their voices.
Yeah, I know. You do a good job many times. You try to match the voices and the tenor and all that. So you chameleon them fairly a lot of the times. With this one, I thought you did all right. But anyway, let's see, as we're on that, we have you dialed in. I want to be respectful of your time, Les, but let's talk about this recent rally. Or let me do this. Let's go ahead and play Matt Graham's, because I think it'd be good for you to get your...
That would be good. Yeah.
Be good on that. All right. Let's get over to Matt Graham of MBS Live. Appreciate him providing us a recording. An interesting market. Really good, great perspective today. So Matt Graham, who is with MBS Live, we're grateful, CEO, with the market update and a lot more specifics about what happened this last week. Matt?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live market update. Last week was fairly epic for the bond market, and for reasons that are pretty easy to understand. For a change, we were hotly anticipating the CPI data on Tuesday and the Fed events on Wednesday afternoon. CPI ended up being forgettable, came in right in line with forecasts. There were actually some reasons for it to push yields slightly higher. It didn't do that in any sort of grand fashion, but it did create a little bit of selling in the morning. Fed announcement on the 13th was the big news of the week, and it wasn't the announcement itself. It was the Fed's dot plot, which is a representation of each Fed member's individual view of where they see the Fed funds rate at various points in the coming years. Fed Chair Powell has said time and again, let's not use the dot plot as some sort of prediction that is heavily traded by financial markets, and then financial markets promptly proceed to heavily trade the dot plot. And it seems like that is just going to be the way it is for the foreseeable future, especially when the state of monetary policy is up for some measure of debate in the coming year or two. That's certainly the case right now as the quote-unquote Fed pivot is assessed, and this refers to a general change from increasingly restrictive monetary policy to a decreasingly restrictive monetary policy. Note that we're not talking about accommodation, we're not talking about rates being in easier territory, we're just talking about them being in less terrible territory, and not necessarily anytime soon. But the fact that we can have these conversations about timeframes that are only a few months into the future is a big change from where we were a couple of months ago. What did the dots say? Basically, they undid the damage done in September. Oh, and by the way, the dots only come out 4 times a year, quarterly, if you will. And the last instance was September. Before that, it was June. September's dot plot was a negative revision from June, negative meaning showing higher rates or higher for longer in any event. It didn't necessarily show additional rate hikes, but it showed 2024's Fed funds rate staying about 0.5% higher than the Fed expected in June. Now, in the most recent dot plot released last week, it shows a reversal of that increase, with the median view at the end of 2024 dropping 0.5%. Whether that's the same or bigger than the market was expecting, the market acted like it was bigger than it was expecting and immediately moved lower in yield, both in short-term and longer-term rates. And then half an hour later, Fed Chair Powell's press conference was seen as an opportunity for him to sort of push back on all the recent bond bullishness. This is not an uncommon thing. It's not a conspiracy theory. It is something that happens, and that Fed Chair Powell has even said the Fed will periodically attempt to sort of moderate the pace of volatility in the way it delivers its comments. And he didn't really do that. He simply stood aside and let the rally run its course. And by not offering any negative reminders, and by very much sticking to the script that we would expect him to stick to, he got out of the way of the rally, and it ran several more bips into the afternoon, taking 10-year yields all the way down to roughly 4%. Once the overseas trading community got a hold of the data, because they don't have a chance to trade it when it comes out during the afternoon in the U.S. on Wednesday, that made Thursday an even stronger day and a truly impressive day for mortgage rate sheets, with lenders dropping well into the 6% range by that time. With that, the bond market made it through its last significant event of 2023. We'll now have to wait for the first week or second week even of 2024 before we get full trading participation, with people not away from the office for winter holidays, and for the significant economic data that the market is waiting for to confirm the Fed pivot. And that's not something that will just happen with one report, but we're still talking about a couple more months of solid CPI data and non-farm payrolls, things like that. Actually, those two things specifically, those are the big two reports that need to continue to show not necessarily economic weakness, but a slower pace of growth and a more moderate pace of inflation. Between now and then, there isn't a huge incentive for rates to move in one direction or the other. That's not to say they couldn't. The last 2 weeks of December have lower liquidity and lower volume, and that means that a smaller amount of trading can have an impact on trading levels. If that happens, it won't necessarily be indicative of what's going to happen in January. It's just more likely to be temporary volatility driven by trading conditions and not by actual underlying fundamentals. That's going to do it for this week. Back to you.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it much. Let's get some feedback on that. Let's start, Mr. Kittle, thoughts on that report and what you've got, and we're going to get Les Parker. Election year. Yes, election year. He's holding that up here. Yeah, it's pretty obvious that seems to be the case. That's it. Yeah.
Look, it's what I've predicted. Maybe I'm going to be right or wrong, and you still don't know, but I said in 2024, into the second and third quarter, we'd see rates coming down because it's an election year. And they can manufacture, they can manipulate rates, they can manipulate oil prices, they can manipulate everything as it comes down. It's not just one-sided, both parties do it, and that's where we are in 2024. Now, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into it, which Les and others will say, but I'll stand firm on
it. Yep, Les Parker is the one that's been calling it and calling it right. He even got ahead of Doug Duncan when we head on here. And Alice, you've been so smart to write down what Les says, because hasn't he been accurate? Look at this. Look right behind this on the screen. You guys can't see it because my microphone's in front of it. But the 10-year, we are consistently down below 4%. Parker, want to get your thoughts. I got to tell you, I thought you were wrong this time. I never wanted to say it boldly, but you were right again. Thoughts on this, and then we'll get on to get Mark's thoughts. But kudos to you, dude. You did it.
I'm trying to remember. Do you give me a ring or something? Is this a championship ring
no
that
Super
I
Bowl.
End up with?
I don't know. There's so many quotables by Doug Duncan. He says, you know what? You have 10 economists in a room. He says he gives you at least 20 or 30 opinions. Forecasts, but you just stay consistently. You were consistently saying, no, this is going to happen. We were all going, I had more people call me. Said, I know you had Les on here, and I know he's been right in the past. I know Alice writes everything down, he says, but once again, what is it that you saw? What is, and then that
pretty easy, Dave. All you have to do is if things keep going up, start saying that it's going to go down, and eventually you'll be right.
Yeah.
I will give you one of my quotes. So back in August 7th in the summer, that was summer for you, wasn't it, David?
Yeah.
Okay. So I said we had the Friday's job report that gave the bulls a reason to dream of reversing the bear trend. Now, I thought it could possibly even be that month. I was off by 4 months. And then focus on the 30-year rates going back below 6%. So I was thinking, this was my original, I thought that we could get below 6% by Christmas. Now, I said it takes more data and particularly around jobs for the bulls to reach nirvana by Christmas. So that is what I thought we could get below 6, but that was in August and we went up even higher in rates. And so I modified it slightly that we'll get back below 7, and we have. And now we got, what, to 6 5/8? And will we go lower in 2024? We already got the answer from David Kittle. The answer is yes. Okay. So will we go lower? Yes, we will go lower. Now, the issue is how much lower. I am looking for, there's all types of caveats, but we'll just get out there on a limb. I'm not afraid to have it sawed off. Alice is good. She can tape it back up and say, we're going to rescue a little. So I do think that we could see 5.5 in mortgages fairly easily. And if you'll remember, Doug Duncan's forecast for the next 5 years that he gave in November of, not 2023, but November of 2022. Boy, so he's saying for the next 5 years, what was going to happen is we're going to be between 5% and 7% on mortgages, probably looking at the mortgage daily indicator because it's going to the lowest rates and it doesn't deal with weekly averages. And I agreed with Doug with the principle, but I said, Doug, you've got to add one and you've got to subtract 1%. So just make the range instead of 5 to 7, make the range between 4 and 8. But the middle remains the same at 6%. So we're going to be this at some point in 2024, we're going to start hovering more around 6. Could we go up to 7 again? Yes. Could we go down below 5? Yes. Could it be spill into 2025? Yes. So it is an environment where what mortgage bankers should be very happy with, loan officers should be very happy with, and consumers be very happy with, is that even though there'll be volatility, it's going to be bouncing around through that 6% number. So do we get up to even 7.5? Maybe. Do we go down to 5.5? I do expect that. But we're going to center around 6. And there's plenty of business out there to be had at 6% mortgages.
Plenty of business. Plenty of business. That's outstanding.
So. Yeah, David Kittle, you've been talking about this for a long time, right? Yeah. That go out there, sell loans, and 6% is a good market.
Yep. If he can find the unmute button, it'll be good. See, that's what happens when you get
there
a guy
who's
trying to operate a computer. Okay.
No, I agree with Les. I don't know that it's going to go all the way back down to 4%. If it you'd have to have deinflation for that to happen. But I understand you spreading it out a little bit. I don't think it's going to get back 2024. I'd put some money on it that you wouldn't get to 8.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to look
but
at
people
it. So
have
mainly.
To go out. The market, Les, has adjusted to 6.5 and 7. I saw some stuff all over LinkedIn and all over Facebook in the mortgage space of both of those over the past 4 or 5 days. That isn't it amazing that all of a sudden people are excited about where rates are today, which is exactly where they were 60 days ago when everybody was complaining about them. It came down. So let's stop it. Go do it. Learn how to talk to a customer and work a loan out, and there's deals to be had.
David, Dave Licken, David Kittle mentioned the D word, and that is actually why I do think we have more of a possibility of lower rates in 2024 than higher.
Yeah. Yep.
I can make a bearish case, by the way.
I know you've built a bearish case, but
I do expect it to go lower, and it is because of the D word, deflation.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that the deflation hits the United States and we actually have declining general prices. But what is already happening in China is China's back in its deflation manufacturing mode. So when we had our very low rates back a few years ago, before the pandemic, that was largely driven by the China selling cheap goods, and they were doing it with lower and lower prices. And now China's doing it again. So if we keep an eye on that, I think that will be one thing. There's some very good news that came out of the COP28. So COP28 was the climate change policy, and there were those that are, I think, over exuberant about trying to have people starve to death so that there'll be fewer people and we can control the climate. So there was this kind of radical agenda that was being pushed there. And fortunately, they weren't able to get it through, and they got a compromise, we'll call it that. And that compromise basically said, we're going to live with fossil fuels. They wanted to just end fossil fuels. That's only 85% of the global economy that's driven by fossil fuels. So it's absurd to even think in those type of words. But right. They have gone ahead and they said, we will figure out a way to get closer to net zero. By the way, I eat a net one bread because I try to reduce my carbs, and you have to offset with fiber. So you get the carbs and the fiber and you get down net one. That's the same thing that they try to do, is that they're trying to, is there a way to net the number? And that's where they're moving towards. That's less draconian. So hopefully fewer people will starve to death, because they have been trying to do things with food supply and other things like that. But that was the very good news. So energy prices have been staying low, and we have a chance for it to go even lower in 2020.
Yeah. Vaughn of Angel AI was actually talking about this to me over a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. He says, really look at the fuel costs be dropping. It's just, there's so many things what's going on in the marketplace. Mark, we haven't had your commentary on all of this. Thoughts?
Well,
I know it's an early Christmas, co-host. I'm so thrilled.
I just had a vision while we're having this conversation of all these shoppers running out this week, the busiest shopping week of the year, and they're going to run out and they're going to say, let's spend money. The rates are going down. The economy's getting better. Let's spend. And I wonder if this early Christmas present of the rate wasn't a little bit driven by some things in the background that's happened to increase spending, increase a flow of the economy, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just interesting that we always have these little tidbits and Christmas presents come out very timely when they probably need to come out. But I will go back and endorse Mr. Kittle's statement too. I think that we've seen it over and over again. All us old guys like me and you, David, have seen it. The politicians have a way of playing with everything during election years. So I don't put any parameters on what will happen next year. We could do something stupid, go to 8% and be back down to 5% the month before the election. Anything is possible with our politicians these days, and the nooks and crannies they can pull things out of to make the economy look better, different, or change it around a little bit. So I'm not going to be surprised with anything that happens during 2024.
Yeah, I think David Stevens says we're ending the crazy season, is what he used to call that, is when we enter an election year. He says we're entering the crazy season. All reality gets decoupled from what's happening. And so I thought that was a good perspective as well. Alice, that got to get you in on this discussion. You're the one that writes these things down. Any thoughts other than I hear your pencil jotting in the background? Les Parker says... So can't wait to get your thoughts.
It's funny. I did have for today's show some of the predictions that people had made. And Les, nice job. One of the interesting ones you guys haven't talked about yet was Doug Duncan saying it's going to be a purchase market for 10 years. And I think as I hear the conversation about where rates are going, one of the other comments this group made was they didn't think that market was going to open up from a mortgage banking perspective until we got into the fives. So I'm curious if you guys still feel that way, that yes, people get a little excited. It's a little energy for the loan officers to feel that rates are back in the six, but it's not this magic refi boom coming into the year. It gives a little bit of a lifeline, certainly marketing opportunities, but it's not some big windfall of now all these new loans or new houses on the market. I'd love your thoughts on
that. Yeah, Les, go to you on that.
You're actually addressing the primary problem that's in the mortgage business. Mark Helm could speak, I'm sure, clearly on this subject too. And that is mortgages, or the existing homes, are all now homeowners. The homeowners of existing homes are living with golden handcuffs. Their golden handcuffs are that they are in below 4% mortgages. We had this time period before in the 70s where we had low rates, and then we ran into the high rates of the mid 80s. And that's when we got wrap mortgages. We had assumptions being done illegally. We had assumptions being done legally, and then they closed loopholes to where they couldn't be assumed, that they inserted into the deeds of trust acceleration clauses. That all that means to the audience is that if you sell your house, the loan has to come due. You have to pay off with the proceeds of the house. We've had a lot of changes in the industry with major interest rate environments. So the low interest rate environment of the 60s and 70s bred all of these people that had low mortgage rates. And now we have that again. And you have, I can't remember, and I don't have the stat in front of me, but I believe it's 75% of all mortgages are in, of existing mortgages are below 4%. It may be 70%. It's a substantial portion of the outstanding mortgages. And that's why people would say, until we got to 5%, you're not going to see a significant improvement in the market, for two reasons. You'll have few refinances. There are refinances, cash out refis, but it would be difficult to refinance a loan that, say, is a 3% loan into a 6 or 7% loan. But maybe at 5, you could rationalize it for various reasons. So it does become a little bit more. The other issue is at 5%, the will loosen up the existing home market a little bit. So people would say, yeah, we could go ahead and pay 5% instead of 3% on our mortgage and see their size down or move up. And I do think there'll be a lot more sizing down. We've had large homes for a number of years now. The growth rate, and I don't have that in front of me right now, but we went from under 2,000 square feet to, I believe it's 2,600 or 2,700 square foot homes. We moved away from 2 bathrooms to 3 bathrooms. We moved away from 2 to 3 bedrooms to 3 and 4 bedrooms. So we've had this growth of homes too. So it will be an interesting market, and we're going to see some of that develop in 2024, but that's probably more of a 2025 event. We'd need lower rates. One more thing on all this. David Kittle talked about rates going lower for political reasons, and certainly I can see some reasons for that. It's harder to use the Fed for that, but they do have control to the Treasury. What I'm concerned about in 2024, if we're going to have significantly lower rates, getting down to 5% or lower, that would be because there's a deep recession. And a deep recessions are not good for the mortgage banking business. Delinquency goes up. Home values could possibly be impaired. You have to deal with more. How do people manage not having a job and you keep them at home? So all types of issues develop. And I do believe we're headed to a recession. There are those that don't think we're going to have a recession. The no landing scenario, forget soft landing, just mean we never go into a recession. They think that's a pretty viable option. And there are a few stats that they're looking at. And I'm not in that camp. I'm expecting a recession. And I think we could be a significant recession.
I would add to that quickly, Les, that there are a lot of Americans over the last year and a half who believe they've been in a recession with high inflation, gas prices, yeah, food, everything, housing. Yeah. Whether you call it that or not, if you remember, we had the administration refusing to call it that when it got to the typical number we've used over so many months, and they just said, no, we're not in that recession. So they just typically call it whatever they need, whether the data says it is or it's not.
Good point.
Yes. Good. Yeah, good point. Let's get over to our friends from CALT for this week's update.
I'm excited to report that CALT's lending partners have done it again. For two quarters in a row, CALT's lending partners have doubled their application volume for trade-in mortgages. It's no surprise that lenders offering the trade-in mortgage are winning deals, even in this market. They are armed with the simplest and most cost-effective buy-before-you-sell product out there. But that is not all. Our lending partners are reporting that they are winning in more ways than one. At CALT, we are sourcing leads and handing them over to our partners. These leads become our lending partners' clients, and LOs report high close rates with those clients, even when the trade-in mortgage isn't needed. For example, one LO said that three CALT referrals led to three closings in 1 month, despite the trade-in mortgage not being used for two of them. Her clients chose to stay with her as a trusted advisor, and she closed two additional loans she wouldn't have otherwise had without working with CALT. Lindsay told us that she believes the realtor's excitement for the program is what really gave her that much-needed edge to win those deals and assist her clients in a way that the other lenders who had pre-approved them couldn't. To find out more about how you can increase your purchase volume with CALT, go to tradeinmortgage.com.
Mr. Kettle, let's get over to you quickly. You had 12 Days of Christmas and overwhelming success. By the way, listeners, I got to put this out there. Kittle's going to brag about the 12 Days of Christmas. We were just named, the Lickin' and Lenny podcast was named out of 35 mortgage podcasts. We're in the top five. So kudos to everyone that's on this call with me. Way to go. My name may be on it, but it is really the contribution that makes this so positive and so powerful of everyone that you've heard and are hearing on this podcast. Congratulations to us. We got a nice Christmas gift that was just announced. Out of 35 podcasts, we're the fifth most popular. The number one was the Housing News by our friends at Housing Wire, and understandably so that they're out there. But for us to land in the top five, and you look at who's below us, and I'm going like, wow, real honor. So thank you. And that has been published by FeedSpot, is the monitoring, the one that monitors the various genres of the various podcasts. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes, and you can take a look at that so you know that we're speaking factually. FeedSpot, thank you so much for honoring us with that. So Mr. Kittle, 12 Days of Christmas, way to go. Very successful. Loved your interview with Ben Carson. That was excellent. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Actually, it's the 12 Days of TMC. 12
days. I am so sorry. Yes.
All right.
All right. So 12, tell us a little bit about it. Why did it was so successful this year?
Our marketing department's going to be calling you after this. So.
okay. Just long you know, don't slick Melissa. She's in the neighborhood. She could drive over here and.
That's right. So this was the most successful one we've ever had. And in this market, we were just really pleased. You could register and, of course, as a company or as an individual and have other people watching your screen. But as far as actual registrations went, we were in excess of 3,500 registrants for the 12 days of TMC. We did something new this time too, David. We had, this was the marketing department, our staff and our members. They wanted something that we now call a solutions sprint. And it was at the last hour of the last day. And we had a panel of judges who judged this live, and they had three solutions that we solved for our members and really for the mortgage industry. And how do we increase D1C AIM utilization without increasing the cost of origination? How do we improve operation efficiency? And how do we create solutions that maximize opportunities to connect home buyers with available inventory in the markets where our lenders serve? And that's the one that won at the end of the day. So that was a really good hour for everybody. And that's exclusive to the members of the Mortgage Collaborative. Yeah. Finally, I want to mention this. We had a stellar lineup of keynotes. And let me just throw four of them out there quickly. We had Mark McCardle from the CFPB. Mark's been a real fan and has come to our conferences. We're always glad to have him. Michelle Sims Ryder. We had Jim Tobin, who runs the Home Builders Association now. Teresa Bazemore, good friend. She's been from the San Francisco Federal Home Loan Bank. And of course, last Thursday, former HUD Secretary Ben Carson. And so we just had a stellar lineup and it was very successful. So thanks for letting me.
Could the listeners go on to the TMC website and listen to those? Is that available to the public now that they've been recorded, published? Encourage everyone to do that. There's some really outstanding content. So kudos to TMC. David, Merry Christmas and congratulations on your set. I know you have got a book out of here. Any final comments that you need to go?
No, just said to everybody listening and all of my friends on here, Merry Christmas and just have a blessed time with family. Thank you, David.
Yeah. You might Thank have you an very- interesting conference because Ben Carson may be the VP choice of Donald Trump.
Yes. That would be a very interesting.
In the political world, they're talking like that. It's not out in public much.
Okay. Thank you. Again, Merry Christmas. See everybody later.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah. Thank you, David. Appreciate it very much. Alice Alvey is here with the legislative update. Alice, so good. Merry Christmas to you and Andy and your whole family. So glad to have you here. What do you have for us today?
Hi, Dave. What a great conversation today, by the way. How fun to have you live, Les. This is great.
I know.
A couple of quick things. Don't forget, everybody, on last week's podcast, I talked a little bit about HUD's 203K proposed changes. These are great changes that we really want everyone to comment on, get on board with. Your comments are due by January 6th. So please take a look at those. HUD is proposing to increase the maximum rehab limit for the limited K. So this really does open up the program a little bit more. Please take a look at those and make sure you get your comments and feedback in to FHA. What's unique about this one is you have to go to their drafting table. If you just Google FHA drafting table, it'll be the first thing right there for you to be able to access and submit your comments on. Secondly, is VA published a notice of advance notice of proposed rulemaking. Comments are due by February 9th, so you have a good amount of time. But really, this is just great that the government agencies are looking at how they can give better access to home ownership with some of their standards that are very tight. And VA actually is proposing to use the Fannie and Freddie condition ratings and do away with their minimum property requirements. We all know that appraisals can be a sticking point with FHAs and VAs. So please, you have a little bit of time to work on that one. Check that out. It's VA's notice of proposed rulemaking for minimum property requirements and to really lighten up on that. So make sure you get out there and comment on both of those great changes for appraisals and government lending. And I think I've talked to you guys already about my predictions that you all wrote down. And now I have my next set for 2023 or 2024 to see what actually happens. So. And I've now written down that great line from Les as homeowners have golden handcuffs with that interest rate. It's a great metaphor.
It's a great one. I love that one too. I agree with you, Alice. Appreciate it so much. Are you going to be home for Christmas? Are you traveling?
I am headed to Annapolis where our family is to spend some time there.
Oh, good. Safe travels. We're traveling up Dave, to Seattle.
I have a question for Alice. For years, VA's appraisal standard was safe, sound, and sanitary. So it really was a minimal type of appraisal in contrast to FHA. That was, they want to make sure the soffits were all fully repaired and you couldn't have any type of blemishes. Is it going to be a unified type of approach of HUD versus VA, or are they still going to be completely independent on the property valuation?
Yeah, I think between FHA and VA, they'll be completely independent. I haven't seen anything from HUD to come out lighten up on their property standards. Yeah, this is VA looking to align more with Fannie and Freddie. We'll take that. And VA still has some quirky things. They publish in the rule. They have about 22 items like egress and ingress on septics. They still have some things that more closely align with FHA than they do with Fannie and Freddie.
Good stuff. Anything else? Mark, you have any comments, questions for Alice you want to add in?
In my past, David, I was an appraiser and a review appraiser. And I think it's real interesting about this FHA and VA thing because I've always had a problem with FHA standards because we don't have those same hard standards in the conventional world. It hasn't posed an issue for us as we've gone down because they come up with all kinds of things in the conventional world we don't care about. And VA is on the other end of the spectrum. So I hope that some of that stuff gets worked out where it's a little better for the consumer down the road.
I agree. One of the things that I'm going to be, just listeners, be aware that we're going to have Alan Weiss on the podcast. He is the founder of Case Shiller. Great story. Alan and I have invested in several of his companies. I serve on a board of his, and he and I are partnering in a new venture together in the new year. And Alan got some really significant developments with Weiss Analytics. And so the founder of Case Shiller is going to be on talking about the future of appraisals, where it's going. It's really interesting. He's got a unique perspective now that he has a new product out that has just won some awards, and it's an AVM. He predicts that the AVMs are very soon going to be more accurate than the desk appraisals that we've been using for years. The rate of it, how quickly are the GSEs going to adopt them? And certainly then you have FHA, which is, again, another topic, as you guys have pointed out.
There's other things going on in the appraisal valuation area, is that they're now using aerial photos and using drones to be able, and it, with certain lights, you can actually get the more accurate dimensions of the homes. They can be then forwarded into the appraisals. There's some technologies that are now available, and they're using AI to apply it into the, so I don't, we're not, it's not going to be like your MAI appraisals of the very historic past, but it's going to be pretty cool stuff that's coming down the pike on technology on,
especially in the appraisal area. I think that's there's going to be some wonderful technology. Again, things that Pavan is doing with Angel AI, significant movements that are not just little micro steps, but moving the ball a little bit, significant quantum leaps on that, especially when it comes to decisions.
Another question on compliance for Alice. There's seen this hiccup that we just had, and I thought Alan was on the line, but this on the, and because I'd like his perspective too, but what we just recently had at Mr. Cooper and with Fidelity, it seemed to really show that there's systemic problems in our industry still, but that brought it really to light. And it made me think that there's going to be increased scrutiny on vendors, even more than what we've been seeing, and maybe start moving in the independent mortgage banking world more into the banking world in terms of the requirements for vendors. Are you hearing anything like that? What's your thoughts on vendor compliance and management?
We used to talk about that a lot, Dave. I don't know if you remember when all those rules came out. That was a big topic on the show for a long time, that lenders really were not getting it, on how detailed it is and how many resources you have to dedicate to the IT needs and really make sure they're out in front of it. And it's hard to be in front of the bad guys, because as soon as we figure out what they're doing, they go invent something new. I haven't heard anything new coming up now, but that's not to say there isn't, because really what's out there today is something I think lenders need to take a good hard look at on how well they're staying in compliance with it.
Les, it's so good to have you join in. By the way, Alan was here. He texted me that he had something while he was waiting to do his segment, which we've gotten into next. And so anyway, he had to drop and texted me. He's going to be publishing his segment as soon as he sends it over, and we'll be having it live. So good to have you here, Les Parker. And Mark, it's good to have you back. It's been
a I'm glad to be time. Here, sir. Really glad to be here. Yeah, in more ways than one.
Yes, as you said at the beginning, any thoughts or reflections on anything in the servicing world, or any MSRs, any predictions on what's happening with the MSRs?
There's been a good bit of MSR activity in the industry the past 90 to 120 days, as people have been still trying to bolster up their financial statements by realizing some of the value they had in their MSR and having that cash in their bank account right now. And I imagine that trend's going to continue as long as the originations are somewhat marginal. That's going to continue on for a while. So I think that's that. I think that there's a lot of renewed interest and focus on the assumption business in our mortgage market now, with the rates being high and so many of the loans and FHA and VA structure that are assumable and people can still get a good bargain. And it's going to create a new opportunity for the interim lenders or the bridge lenders out there to do the equity type plays and the purchase money seconds, et cetera. I think those are going to filter up, but it's going to be interesting. I think a lot is going to be driven by what we're talking about on these rates a little bit, but I don't see significant changes in the market in the next 90 days anyway. But I think after that, we'll start seeing some movement that's going to maybe have a little more effect on servicing and all. It's still hard. That vendor question that came up, It's still hard in my mind to select a good vendor to do things. We've got a lot of good vendors out there, but it's so many of them are still missing the boat on the service level it's required to the lenders. And I just caution anybody in our servicing world out there that's listening to this podcast today, you got to make sure when you're using a vendor that you manage them the same way you would manage your people. And actually, you manage them a little bit closer than that, because they're out of sight and out of mind, and that's your customer they're dealing with. And it can have a real detrimental effect on your company if you don't do a good job of managing your vendors. So that's the caution that I give, and my New Year's recommendation for mortgage companies that have servicing portfolios and use vendors.
Dave, there may be a lot of loan officers right now wondering about this, assuming of VA and FHA loans. I'm hearing it talked about on the different customers we interact with, and I'm hearing it from the executive management saying that their loan officers want to offer some type of product that they can just somehow wrap it all up and pick up a commission, and it's saying it doesn't work that way. But I think it's important that we bring up the old-fashioned rules that are still in place, that if you assume a VA loan, the veterans that had that VA and their certificates on it, they cannot do anything. They can't go get another VA loan unless VA eligibility increases. And then they would only have a portion because it's based on a ratio of their down payments. Any nuance to that, Mark, that you would like to add about the VA side?
I am pretty sure that when you do a VA assumption, and if I'm incorrect on this, I'll correct it on next podcast, but I'm pretty sure that if you assume a VA loan, the loan's assumable by anybody as long as the veteran's eligibility stays on it. But
that's right.
You can get the person's new eligibility to step in. If a veteran assumes
you can
I think that's the way it is. So
yeah.
It can be assumed with a veteran stepping his eligibility in, but it does tie up the previous veteran's eligibility.
Very important on VA loans that veterans understand that if they sell their house on assumption and assuming it's not to a veteran, because you are right, you can do a substitute, essentially.
Yeah.
But you can't do that if it's a non-veteran. So therefore, your eligibility gets tied up until that loan is it's not either paid off or there's a certain balance down to, I can't remember exactly how it works. In terms of FHA, it is true that they can be assumed. There's not an escalation clause. However, the original signer is still obligated on the note. Now, are they going to go after it? Historically, not. However, that ties up whether they can go buy a car, whether they can go buy another house, because they now have that contingent liability. So I think people need to remember that obligation is not forgiven. So the person that originally signs is the one that's still the contingent liability. So if they sell it, then the new buyer is going to make the payments, you would assume. And then if they stop making payments, the only recourse that you have as the original signer of the note is that collateral hopefully covers it all. But you could significantly impair your credit. There are ways that you can step in with lawyers and you can retake it over, but that's not simple. It's complicated.
Les, you made a very good point and you're right on target on that. But one of the things that you made me think of and given your chat there is we need to make sure in our industry that the lenders who are pushing the assumptions to retain that MSR value in their portfolio, make sure they give that prior lender proper notice and remind them of those obligations on a go-forward basis, or it could be some nasty lawsuits come up.
Hearing is that the loan officers are being told by these independent companies, they're just saying, look, if you get that type of call or you get involved with an agent wanting to do that, you just say you have to call your servicer. It's that really that simple for originators. Originators should stay away from this as far as I'm concerned. You should say to any of your real estate agents or to any of you dealing directly with a borrower and they have some questions for you, say you have to work through your servicer on that. And the servicer will make sure there's the right reps and warrants and all those type things.
Very good. We're out of time. Man, this hour has gone by so quickly. It's been so good. Mark, it's good to have you back. I can't tell you.
It's so good to be back. You just don't know how much I missed this.
We've truly missed you. And Les Parker, we got to have you dial in more often. I love the questions you ask of the regulars, and it's just your wisdom. I continue to just stand in awe and amazement of your accuracy in forecasting interest rates. Way to go.
All I want to do is, if I can be right on the long term 60 to 65% of the time, then that's okay. It's certainly not right all the time. You have to adjust things. And what's interesting about forecasting, the reason there are forecasts by people like myself that are not like Doug Duncan, and also you have Doug Duncan's, there's reasons why there's forecast and outlooks. And it is for people to establish budgets. It's almost always for budgeting. Stan Middleman at Freedom, he has said that he uses my information. And the reason he uses my information is for helping to form the way they structure their budgets. Now, he has lots of input, but he has been a fan of our newsletter for a long time, and I appreciate it. And I have a good relationship with him. We talk about strategic things and long-term things, but it's a context. So even though a forecast may be wrong, did it at least get you to think about things? And I just recently read the book Escape from Model Land that Doug Duncan had recommended on your podcast on Halloween. On October 31st. And if any of your listeners haven't heard that podcast yet, you would think, oh, that's now 3 months old. It is very apropos. Very we talked about the Fed somewhat in there and what they were immediately going to do, but it was in a broader context. But Doug recommended on that podcast, Escape from Model Land. Now, it is more for modelers or those that oversee modelers. But one of the key things about it is the reason for models is to help people get context for the future. And you can then have multiple models that you look at, just like we do for hurricanes, right? They have all those lines, all those different models that are tracking the hurricanes. And it's not that one will be right and the other won't be wrong, though everyone wants bragging rights. It's where are the possibilities? And so if you're emergency personnel or executives that are trying to know where you should deploy assets, you at least have some choices of where you may want to deploy those assets. So that's the reason for forecasting. We try to predict whether you're going to have tornadoes or hurricanes in the financial world, and then try to say, and if those things happen, where do rates go? More for context. That's what it's for.
Yeah, it's great stuff. I tell you, I'm got to wrap this up. I want to say again, thank you, Les, for joining in live. Great contribution today. And as you do each and every week, again, we're number 5 out of the top 35 podcasts in the mortgage space. And this is international. There's a couple in here from Australia. So we're really doing well. And I want to thank you, our listeners, for sharing this podcast with your friends and your peers, and we're so grateful to have you here. Mark, good to have you back. Merry Christmas.
David, can I give you a little closing comment?
Yeah, please.
When you invited me to be on this podcast a good while ago, I was excited about it. I'm more excited about it today than I was then. Continue to be more excited, especially having Les on today, because every time Les on, I grab a few nuggets to put in my backpack that I can use in the future. And I look back at my tenure in the industry and the years I spent in it and pushing towards that hard number of 50 years in the industry. And you think you know everything and you don't. And it's so invigorating to be surrounded by such knowledgeable people on this podcast where I know that every time I show up on a Monday, and this is an appropriate comment to be made for our last podcast of the year, when I show up on a Monday, I'm always going to gain something from that podcast and I'm always going to grow. And it's amazing how many things I learn on it I can put to use in a future conversation or a future consulting assignment. David, I want to thank you for establishing this podcast and all the years it's been around, because you've been an invaluable service. And I thank people like Les that are bringing solid content approach. Yes. It's just really amazing. And I'm so honored to be on this podcast.
Thank you, Mark. It's an honor to have you. It's an honor to do this. It's an honor to be awarded as we have been. We really are here. The primary purpose is, again, to just help
people stay informed on all that's going on. And I'm so grateful for everyone who participates. Also grateful for our sponsors. I want to thank Byte Software, Finastra, Total Expert, Lender Homepage, Truve, Angel AI, Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, The Mortgage Collaborative, Knowledge Coop, iEmergent, Mobility MMI, Modix, and just all of you listeners, thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Have a wonderful new year. Listen to Christmas podcast as well as the New Year's podcast. Some great content. And we'll see you back here live with this podcast on our regular commentary the first Monday after the first. Have a great week, everyone. Thank you so much for being here.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.